This is for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
And for the last time in 2017, this is For The Players, the pop culture's PlayStation podcast. Almost 40 years of playing PlayStation and 6 plus years in that games media combined. We thought we'd throw our hats into the ring and join that PlayStation conversation. I had a burp stuck halfway through that.
If you would also like to join the PlayStation conversation, you can do so every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, iTunes and other podcast services. How do you join that conversation? Simply head over to www.thepopculturist.com/questions. Give us your thoughts, questions, and suggestions for the show. If a week between shows is a little bit too long, please consider joining us on Facebook, Discord, and if you're feeling generous, join us on Patreon. Head over there, check out the tiers. There might be something there that interests you.
If you like what we're wearing, be sure to head to thepopculturist.com/shop. Pick yourself up some Pop Culturist merchandise after years of doing this. About a year and a bit on YouTube's. And 2 years as a radio show, we finally have a line of merch.
Yeah, mine's a little snug. I apologize for the belly poking out here, but...
You misjudged.
It's either I buy a bigger size or I lose some weight, so I'll probably just buy a bigger size. Bit of housekeeping before we get into it. This is the last show for the year. If you're listening to it today, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas!
Thanks for tuning in on Christmas Day.
Very nice of you, now that you've spent the time with your family, you know, pretending to love each other and stuff, and then you come to who you really love.
So we'll be back on January 8th with the first episode of 2018. And heading into 2018, we've had a bit of feedback about the show. And the general feedback has been, could the podcast be available earlier than the YouTube video? Yes, it can. The podcast will be available on iTunes and the other podcast stuff at 8 a.m. on Monday.
Yep.
For all of those of you making the work commute and whatnot, we have heard you and we have listened.
Yeah, so the show will still be the same at 9 a.m. every Monday on videos for the YouTubes. But yeah, you'll get it the hour early. And if you're on Patreon, one of our fine Patreon supporters, get a day earlier.
Yeah, pretty sweet deal.
It's a pretty sweet deal.
So, yeah. Final show of the year.
Yeah.
It's been a long road.
Dude, it's been like, how many?
34 episodes. Not bad. Not bad.
For the Players has been exceptionally inconsistent.
Yeah, well, I mean, it started as we were just, after the demise of one of our favourite PlayStation podcasts, we were searching for another.
Yep.
And we couldn't find one that kind of jived with
us. Especially one in Australia.
Yeah, and we thought, well, fuck it, let's do it ourselves. And it's become... quote unquote, the flagship show of the channel. Yeah. You know, it is a guaranteed every Monday show, and I love doing it.
It's now on a shirt.
Yeah, I love doing it. You love doing it. People like listening to it, between 50 people and 3,000 people, depending what episode it may be. But it's fun. I'm looking forward to a fun 2018.
Yeah, and for those of you that have joined the channel because of the For The Players videos, thank you so much. Love you very much. You're fantastic.
On with the show, though.
What have you been playing?
Well, let's title what the show is first.
Okay, so today's episode is our Game of the Year picks. There's no news. There's no news this week.
It's Christmas
fucking,
week.
It's fucking Christmas. There's nothing. No. So we're going to talk about what our games are for the year. But first things first, we'll talk about some games that may not make our list. What have you been playing? But I think your game you've been playing does make
that
list.
Yeah, I did. I've been playing Nier since I purchased it for myself last week, much to your chagrin.
Yep, fuck you.
Fucking sweet.
So I've been able to play it as well.
I'm not going to talk too much about it because it is in my Game of the Year listing, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's really unique and it's really... really good and really clever as well. It kind of because the game's developed by Square Enix, but the combat engine is done by Platinum Games.
Okay.
And Platinum Games has a tumultuous history. It's been up and down, but
That's
it is
a big word.
Most famous for Bayonetta.
Yeah.
And Bayonetta's combat I always really enjoyed, and they've kind of brought that over to Nier. It's really fun. It's good. But yeah, I'll elaborate more on that a little bit later. But that's Christmas week with work. That's all I've played this week in my spare time. Mind you, I managed to rack up 20 hours.
Yeah.
But that's because I was trying to get through as much of it as I can before today's episode.
That's right. So we're on the holidays now because the day this goes up is the Monday. You and I both finished work on Friday.
Correct.
So I got 2 weeks off.
Yep. I got 2 weeks off.
Yeah. Good time.
As well. What about you?
What have I been playing? I've been playing a couple little things, dabbling into a couple little things.
That's your year in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I play. Yeah. So we'll get into that when we start jumping chat. But I've played the Monster Hunter World beta because it went live again.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be live until tomorrow, I believe. If you once you're done listening to us, you want to do some more stuff that doesn't involve your family, play Monster Hunter World.
It's open beta this time.
It is open beta.
You don't have to have PS Plus to participate.
I dig it. I like its style. Mm-hmm. I like the way... I think it looks really good, and it's nice and crisp and colourful, but also gritty at the same time. I like the idea of a big F-off weapon that can morph. Like, it's kind of like, it's an axe, now it's a sword, and you can
change... Now it's a gun!
Yeah, and you can change it mid sort of monster hunt, I guess.
Yeah.
But the only issue that I'm having with the beta, at least, is the fact that it's very clearly, here's this sample, here's this sample, here's this sample.
Yeah.
So... even though I enjoyed what I did, I still want to play the retail version because I think that'll give me a better sense, a feeling of what it's supposed to be in terms of your arc, as in you finding weapons and building those weapons. You know,
and preparing for the hunts ahead. You know,
yeah, because they pretty much drop you right. They're like, hey, the creature's over there. You can set up some things if you want. If not, you can just set right over.
Yeah, but the original game is like, well, from what I've heard anyway, is that you know you need to prep. You look at the monster you're fighting, get the info on it. What could help me? You know, what potions could help me? What traps could help me? Where can I lay them in advance? You know, you really plan ahead for this hunt, and I think it'd be really cool to kind of from start to finish, like planning the hunt, executing the hunt, finishing the hunt, and having that accomplishment.
Yeah, you know? I kind of just ran in and attacked him with an axe, so
yeah,
I didn't put that much thought into it.
Yeah, I think you know that was the beta's idea. It's like here's the gist of the game. Many much more to it, but this is the basics.
Yeah, and then my little cat creature Joshua.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because whenever it's like you need a secondary character, I'm like, Josh.
Oh, well, we got Betson as like my rival in Pokemon.
Yeah, games. Me too. Yeah. You're my rival in Pokemon as well.
Betson comes and talks shit and you know, beat the shit out of him, but then you get your revenge in your playthrough.
Yeah, I'm like, ooh. Other than that, I've been. I played Nier as well, but we'll talk a bit more about that when it pops up in wherever in your list of games. And I've been playing GTA Online.
Yeah, it's kind of came out of nowhere. You're jumping right back in. And
after watching the NoClip documentary, when I saw these guys in their community of GTA Online, because I loved playing GTA Online when I was like, I loved it on PS3, then I went back to it a little bit when it came to PS4. But I had so much fun being our little crew. We were the BMX Burritos because the BMX Bandidos was taken. So then we just became the Burritos, and then every tier of our, because there's different levels within a crew.
Yep.
So as you earn more XP, you grow XP within the crew as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And each
like, guild XP. It's essentially guild XP. To the guild XP.
Spot on.
Yeah.
So different levels had different names. So like when you first come in, you're tortilla, and then you're lettuce, and then and like tomato. Then there's like you know the salsa, and then like if you hit top ranking in the crew, you're the big bean burrito.
Okay.
Then you're obviously the big cheese is the next one down, and then you sort of make it.
Okay.
It was fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I actually made a Popsy crew as well, just in case, because why the hell not?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not everyone wants to be a BMX burrito, but I've been playing with Craig and James James from Nerds in Places. That's his new little podcast venture. Pretty good shit. Check it out. It's SoundCloud. So him, the three of us, and I'll play Josh Anderson as well. We streamed it the other night. I've been trying to do these heists. So last time I stopped playing was last time I was playing, they had just released the initial heists. So after, one of the biggest staples in GTA 5 is bank heists. And there was always this wonder of like, when are these coming into GTA Online? It took ages and ages and ages and ages. When they finally came in, and they were great. The only downside was, you know, you need at least four people to play, and like some of my friends were in and out, and they were kind of like not feeling it. So like eventually I drifted away as well. Mm. And now there's, you know, three of us. Like James loves GTA Online. He's like, whenever you want, if I'm online, play anything else, let me know. I'm going to cut out and I can play. He's in. He loves GTA.
Yeah.
So him, Craig, and myself were just sort of doing the heist. Or some, because each heist has obviously the main heist and then a bunch of setup stuff. So there's like five missions in total normally, and each of them add things. So like what we're doing right now, I think we're breaking into like a giant lab. Mm. So what you need is you need a helicopter, you need an EMP, you need like, so each bit, step by step, it's just building, it's missions to build up to the main mission. Downside is, because it's three of us, we always need a fourth person. The game, the heists require you have a fourth person, because each person has their clear role in the heist. So we had no choice but to bring a random person in, and they're just not helpful.
That's online games.
So even though I bought you Nier and now I get to play Nier, I'm gonna buy you GTA. Oh, and you should cash come. That's your Christmas present instead of Nier.
Well, now I feel obligated to have to play.
That's the point.
Fuck. Oh, we're on holiday, so you know.
Yeah, because like the open world is a dumpster fire. Like when you get people just come fuck you up all the time, but you can create like a private server.
Yeah, yeah. So I played online a little bit on the PS3, dicked around, but I never really kind of got it. You know how like you get so comfortable with a game, you jump in and you know you're doing this and I'm gonna do that and that. I was still in that lost, like I'm kind of figuring it out, and then I had no one to play with, so I just stopped playing.
Well, because I picked up GTA 5 launch day, like midnight launch. So and then I remember the online came about a month later. So I gave you a month to sort of finish the campaign, and I remember I was there. The second those servers opened, I was there. I was in. So like, I know the game, like the online, pretty much back to front within reason. Like now there's so much new shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's crazy. And like shit's really expensive in game too. But that's the benefit of like having someone that's played a while, that's got a bit of bit of money in the bank. Mm. They can then buy the things that are already there, and then we all work together to accrue more money, and then you can start purchasing those things.
Feed me.
Yeah.
Feed me the free gear.
So one thing that just, so there's a lot. So the apartment that I have in the game is what was considered the high-end apartment at the time. It was like 500K. So at the time, everyone's like, whoa! And I'm like, yeah, motherfucker. I grinded like 60 hours.
Well, I'm living in my dingy dad's back room.
I was living in my, in a shitty, like, you know, two-bedroom house with my father. Just like, yeah, grinding this GTA. So now they've got like, you know, hangars where you can, you know, store planes, and they've just released these bunkers where you can do huge shit, right? There's also like facilities and where you can do gun running and like drug running and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, like the ways of revenue are way higher than they ever were. Back in the day, it was just a single mission structure, which kind of gave you a decent turnaround, but not enough to be actually like actively function.
Yeah.
Now the way that's moving, so all you need is one person with a big facility, and we can all just do gun running and drug running, and then, and you have your own facility, then, you know.
Cool. Sounds fun.
It sounds like it is a lot of fun, and I'm enjoying being back into it, and I can't wait to do it some more.
Sweet.
But it's pretty much all I paid.
On to the main topic then.
Nice and easy. So, 2017 has come to a close. And as a result, there's been many, many games I've played this year. I actually went through and counted all the games I played. I went through like the release schedule of the year. I was like, this is at work, by the way, just to add context. I'm like, yep. Okay, yeah, cool. I've played 61 games this year.
It's more than one a week.
That is more than one a week. So I would like to say a big thank you. Obviously, we've bought a handful of these ourselves, but majority of them have come from PR peoples and whatnot. So massive thank you, because they've essentially allowed us to make content this year.
Yeah,
in no other way would I ever be able to play, talk about, create content for 61 games if it wasn't for those guys.
Yeah,
period.
Yeah, it's been a good year, and what a year to get into it as well.
Oh my god,
an insane year this year. Even with the official Game of the Year awards 2 weeks ago, I'm looking at the list, I'm like, there are so many more games that deserve to be on this list.
Yeah. So if like when I was collating my list, now you were pretty strict. You're like, pick one for each. I'm like,
except for Game of the Year.
Game of the Year, we there's like a three.
So we've got four categories. The Game of the Year category, we have our top three each, but the other three categories, we've just picked our top.
So the categories are as follows. We've got the Game of the Year, obviously. We've got the Best Game Played, which can be a game that you've played this year or that released a previous year.
Mm-hmm.
Best Independent Game and the Biggest Disappointment.
Yeah.
So, like I said, overall, this year has been phenomenal. Shit kicked off really hard in January with like Resident Evil and like some real solid starters to the year, moving into sort of February and March with release of the Switch, and then we've got Zelda, then we've got
Horizon,
and then just keep moving.
And then Persona,
and then you just keep moving down the list.
Oh, in March as well, Nier, of course, as well.
And then big sleeper hits like Nioh, which came out and just dominated people, and you know, it's like, the amount of like just consistent releases across the year has been insane. The only time it's died down has been November and December, because everyone's realized that you don't have to release a game in the Christmas break to be successful. So they've sort of moved it back a little bit or throughout the year. And it's great you know, you don't, rather than having to rely on games solely coming out in one time of the year, yeah, you can spread your money out.
I'm enjoying this. I like the spread this year because every month there was always at least that one big game that I'm like, I can't wait for this. Gave me enough time in between to kind of get through what I wanted to get through. It's been one of the best years of gaming in my life, really.
Yeah.
Like, you know, PR codes and stuff aside, even just as a regular consumer, this year has just been, doesn't matter what platform you're on, than Microsoft, it's been fucking insane. It's been such a good year.
Yeah, it has been really, really cool. And like looking at my 61 games I've played, I'm like,
how do I pick?
I'm like, how do I pick? And like, apart from maybe one or two, I've not really had any major dud games.
No, not say there hasn't been a couple.
You're saying apart from a handful, yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into it then.
Let's get into it. So speaking of dud games, let's kick things off with our biggest disappointments of the year.
This was between two games.
Okay.
For me, I'll go first. The two choices for me were Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't buy it, didn't play it, but it's well documented enough, the story of this game, yeah?
Yeah, I thought about it as well, and I'm seeing a lot of lists online of other outlets putting Battlefront 2 as their big disappointment of the year. Now, I can't confirm whether they've played it or not, but I simply haven't put it on my list because I haven't played it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dylan's picked it up and he made an excellent review about it. You know, it's up on the website, up on the YouTubes as well. But regardless of its impact on games this year, which has been horrendous, I felt uncomfortable putting it on my list.
Nah. Yeah, well, me too, in a way. So, Bungie fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
Bungie fucked up well good. The Destiny 2 is my biggest disappointment of the year, this year.
You spent so much time with it.
Despite, well, this is the issue, is the first 2 weeks I had it, I nailed that game. Mm. I played so goddamn much and had such a great time. I did the raid with Max and his friends. I'm like, this is sweet. This is awesome. And then nothing. Like, nothing new came out. There's nothing worth doing. All the new content is pouring it all into the Eververse, which is the loot boxes. So the latest expansion, Curse of Osiris, gave you, for $20, gave you a story that can be completed in an hour and 15 minutes. Gave you all these new weapons and guns in the loot boxes, not earnable outside the loot boxes. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, locked you out of activities you could do previously. So you used to need to do Trials of the Nine, which is like the group PvP thing, mm-hmm. and the Nightfall Strike.
I'm just going to pull up my list. Keep going.
You used to need 300 light to do them. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Which was the
end game.
That's the top tier.
That
yeah?
was the end game content. Your 305 was the max cap, but you needed about 300 to be able to do these activities.
Mm-hmm.
So when they released the expansion, if you can even fucking call it that, they raised the minimum cap because the light cap raised.
Yes.
So activities that you used to be able to do with your friends, all of a sudden you couldn't do because you didn't buy the expansion. You were literally locked out behind the expansion paywall.
Mm-hmm.
That's fucked. Now, Bungie have come out and they've gone, oh, we didn't mean it. We apologize. We're sorry. Statement they've made a few times. I've copy and pasted statement.
Well, yeah, because I remember there being a recent one where the amount of XP you were getting off things didn't match the number.
That's what I was about to touch on, is that you'd have all these XP buffs on, but as you did more and more of the same activity, it started to slowly nerf the experience you were getting. Because every time you level up past cap, you get a bright engram, which is all your cosmetics and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And they secretly had, a cap and diminishing returns on your XP. And, you know, Bungie came out and said, oh, so we didn't realize, we're sorry, we've heard that, we've listened to your feedback, we're sorry. Fuck off.
Mm.
Fuck right off with all this shit. All the blame doesn't lay on Activision. A lot of people are like, it's just Activision, you know, but it's not, because Bungie were doing a lot of the same stuff in Destiny 1. And at the state Destiny 1 was by the end of it with Rise of Iron, that was Destiny. That everyone was like, this is great, this is the best, there's so much to do, so much to see, lots of replayable content, stuff to grind for. And Destiny 2 pretty much just hollowed it out in every way possible. So after you get through that first initial burst of like, I'm seeing all the new stuff, it's fun, it's cool, after it, it's just like, why the fuck do I want to keep playing this? Like, literally, if you hit the light cap, there is nothing you can do in that game other than wait for the next $20 hour expansion. And you look at $20 expansion, the Frozen Wilds for Horizon, like 15 hours plus of new content. The Witcher with all of its $20 expansions, 20 hours plus of new top-tier content. Curse of Osiris, an hour and a half, and you're just fighting the fucking Vex again. They're just a little bit darker in color.
Ooh.
Big fucking whoop. Fuck you, Bungie. Fuck you, Activision. I had such high hopes for this game. And you lost it, and you lost a lot of, if you go to the Bungie forums today,
probably inactive.
No, no. Every single post on the front page is just get rid of the Eververse. Mm. Just over and over again, because it's really fucking the game up. That's it. I don't want... Yeah. Bungie done effed up.
Yeah. Destiny 2 did make my little short list as well. I've got three written down, but there was a fourth one that kind of popped up as we're talking. So the four that I sort of think about the most, but I'll narrow it down to the one that I actually picked. So Destiny 2, same vein as you. Like, I played the beta. The beta rocked. I enjoyed the beta so much. And I'm like, cool, this is going to be really good. And then as I started playing Destiny 2, started not feeling it. You guys all ran ahead of me. So I'm like, well, where's the fun in this? I'm out and I'm done. And I, like, even though I tried to go back in and try to reach that level, it just bored me. I didn't enjoy it at all. The other one is Little Nightmares. Mm-hmm. I remember picking that up, and I remember the selling point of that was like, it's like kids' nightmares, all this cool little shit. And
playing on your childhood
fears. And I played it, and I felt like Inside, but in three-dimensional space. So Inside was fantastic, and the game was all right. It just didn't have the spook that they were talking about. I wasn't feeling it.
Yeah.
But the one that wins, this biggest disappointment of the... Oh, sorry. Then we've got Yooka-Laylee as well.
Yeah.
Yooka-Laylee was a game that seemed really interesting in terms of it's coming back to the 90s platformer, the 90s character platformer, which something that I never really dealt with, not having a 64, so I never played Banjo, I never played Donkey Kong 64. Like, I'd crash, obviously, on PlayStation, but just, eh. So we'll provide a copy of it. I remember Dylan and I came in and streamed, because that was Dylan's sort of heritage. He did love those games a lot. And it was just monotonous. It was annoying. It handled like crap. Mm-hmm. It just was not a good game in any way. And my number one, as we're there now, is Outlast 2.
Yeah.
I remember the controversy surrounding that game. We're like, man, this game's going to be fucking dope. Like, looking at why it's got banned.
It nearly didn't make it to Australia.
It nearly didn't make it here. Mm. And we're like, okay, well, this has got to have some new, some, like, not be cool, but it'd be like some edgy shit, some shit we haven't seen before. And like, it'll make... it could potentially be the new line for horror games. No. It pretty much took, like, it is a sequel, of course, so it's going to always be based on the same stuff, but it is the same run and hide that Outlast had. The only difference is now you can sort of run around outside and, you know,
I'd argue that Outlast 2 did the same thing as Outlast 1, but worse. Because Outlast 1... was so good at the psychological side of it, whereas Outlast 2 was just run away from this person because they'll kill you if they catch you.
Yeah, and what I found a lot of the time, it was mostly, you know, like, the sights on these NPCs was insane. Mm-hmm. You sneak in and think, like, what the fuck am I behind a tree?
That's right. Yeah, I remember. Because we streamed that.
Yeah, we did.
And
we streamed it for
so
about
much
3 hours.
Going on in that game.
It was fun to stream because we're bullshitting off each other, but it just didn't. Could have been expectations, but with that controversy, whether it be set up or intentional or just accidental, really put it in a different place. And that game came out to be nowhere as good as I expected. Now, what we've also done is we did reach out to the communities on the Facebooks. We gave them the same four categories, so we're going to throw to what they said. What about their disappointment?
Biggest disappointment of the year for the Pop C community from Max Cooper. Biggest disappointment, Destiny 2.
Okay.
Coming from Max.
Yeah, Max.
Hammered it more than I did.
Yeah, Max destroyed that game. Yeah. Probably maybe not disappointment. Yeah.
Buddy Watson, Dis. Yooka-Laylee.
Yep, cool, buddy. I like your style.
Justin Hatsy O'Neill, Dis. COD World War II single player.
Oh, wow. Okay, so having not finished the COD... to the surprise of no one, not finishing the COD World War II single player. Like, it started strong, so I must fade out towards the end.
Yeah. I've heard the same thing. I watched a few reviews, and it's like, it started real cool, but then towards the, like, mid to end point, it just turned into the same COD tropes over and over again. Dave Chataway, Shadow of War.
Yeah, makes sense. Another game that I played this year. Like, I enjoyed... what's the first one called? Shadow of War?
Mordor.
Shadow of Mordor.
Shadow of Mordor.
Whatever. Shadow of Mordor. I enjoyed it quite a bit. You know, my wife loved it.
What is wrong with your mouth?
I need water, and I haven't had any.
There's a cup over there. Yes, I don't know how old it is.
That's been there for like 4 days.
It's just water, though.
Yeah, it's very dusty in here.
Okay.
So yeah, so it is literally cut and paste the same game.
with loot boxes.
For good or bad, but with loot boxes at the end. I've been informed that the ending of the game is just incredibly repetitive.
Yeah.
We talked about Paul. I hit the same thing. I hit a point and it's just literally the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Trying to grind out the true ending.
Not even in a fun way.
Chris Conway, Star Wars Battlefront 2. Because fuck you, EA, he says.
Who's this, sorry?
Chris Conway.
What was his pick?
Battlefront 2.
Fantastic.
Pay attention.
Sorry, Joel, I got a message from Chris Conway.
Joel Groughton, Battlefront 2. Haven't played it, but the whole issue is around the game's really tarnished a game I was very excited for. And Jess, biggest disappointment, Lego Worlds.
Ah, that game caught my interest because it was coming to the Switch, and I was like, yeah, let's think about it. And then I'm pretty sure you did exactly that.
I know, I played it. I got it when it came out on Steam last year or the year before. It's garbage.
Hot trash. It's like Minecraft.
The
Lego.
Idea is really cool. The execution's really poor. That was a big issue. That's it for our biggest disappointments. Let's get into happy places now.
Happy places!
So let's no more shit talking about any games.
It's all good news from here.
So let's go into the category of best game played this year. So like Ryan said before, this game can be a game that either you don't think should have been game of the year, but you had the most fun playing, or a game you played for the first time this year but didn't release this year.
Mm.
So my best game played this year is Persona 4 Golden.
That's a given.
Surprise! Yeah. I mean, when I finished it, we did a whole fucking episode of just me gushing. I need to talk about Persona 4. I tried a couple times in previous years to get into it, but it never really kind of got hooks in me. But yeah, this year I dove straight in, got real into it. I cried, I laughed, I like threw the Vita in anger. Mm-hmm. Not out of like me like dying, but like story beats. I'm just like, ah, no! It's just an incredible game, and like it all happens around this little town of Inaba, but it feels like such a big world outside of that. And then going into the TV universe and stuff as well, the characters are all amazing. It's just a very well written game, and it hits all the right beats to like get you invested and make you upset and then bring you back up with the happiness, and then the twists and turns and the story is a little bit convoluted towards the end. But then, the main antagonist comes out of nowhere, someone you had not. You're like, no way! Mm. One of those, when the main antagonist is revealed, you're like, get fucked, no way. Mm. But then there's flashbacks to all these things, and then all the pieces just fall into place, and you go, you motherfucker. I can't gush enough about it. I wanted to sell my Vita this year because I'm never going to touch it again. And then I kept it just for Persona 4, just in case. That one game is making me hold on to my Vita. And I might never play it again, but I need to have it there. Knowing that I can. That fallback cushion, knowing that I can. But yeah, Persona 4 is one of the best games I've ever played, much less more this year.
I've had Persona 4 on my Vita for a very long time. Like, when I got my Vita, they were talking about, the staple games that you must have. And Persona 4 is the number one on, like, literally all those lists.
Yeah.
So when I did see it come on sale, I picked it up, and I didn't really play it at the time. It didn't catch me, right?
Mm.
And then the hype around Persona 5, and I was like, all right, I'll give this a go before Persona 5 comes out. I'll play it a little bit. I should put that on my list, but I didn't put it on my list. I didn't write down any of the little games that I played on my Vita.
Because nothing worth playing.
Well, not really, because of the games I played this year. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed quite a lot. The only downside was, playing on the Vita. That's actually what made me less likely to play it.
Really?
Yeah.
But you loved your Vita.
I do love my
More
Vita.
More than anyone else I know.
Yeah, but like at the same point, I would have really enjoyed that on the screen. I think it would have looked really cool. Like,
that's why you can remote play it to the telly.
What?
Oh no, it goes the other way.
The other way, only goes the other way. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I actively started hunting a PlayStation TV to be able to like put, just load it to the and play it on TV. That was my plan, and they were very hard to come by, apparently. Yeah.
But it was in that period of like, if you didn't finish Persona 4 before March, you were never going to finish.
Which is
that
the point?
Game.
Yeah, I got to about a week before Persona 5. I'm like. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the only reason I really jumped into it, because I was about halfway through it and I thought Persona 5's coming out. I want to tick off 4 before I play 5. So it was between, mid-January and the start of March, where that stretch of time where I really got into it. I will play it again one day.
No, but it is a really good game and I enjoyed it quite a lot. Yeah. I do think about going back to it, but the problem is I'm the same boat as you, like playing my Vita, very unlikely.
Yeah.
Very unlikely these days. Now, because I've, is it once again, because I played a ton more games than you did, My short list is a little bit longer.
I was very picky with my games.
I pretty much, for best games played, it was more of a game that I had a lot of fun with. And to me, a lot of the games that we've played this year, I've played on streams. So a lot of the fun is associated to that stream. Mm-hmm. So my short list is as follows. So Everybody's Golf. I loved it. It was chill. It was zen. It was like a farming game in the same level of zen for me.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was really, really fun. But I should also put on there City Skylines. I had so much fun with City Skylines. You know, be able to make different districts. And then we made the Josh Saunders Hare Memorial Cemetery, which is so you can come back. Yeah, it's having a resurgence.
I just haven't bothered.
And then we had, like, you know, a road that went down to the sewage factory. It was poop shoot. You know, like, the amount of fun that I had with City Skylines and the interactivity I had with you guys in the stream. And it was, like, it really shaped that game to be something amazing. And, like, I'm keen to stream it again, actually, just to have more fun.
Yeah.
You know, if we're looking, you know, I've got South Park on the list as well, but that's part of my game of the year, one of my Game of the Year nominees as well. So we'll get to that in a minute. Then, but I think what I'll put down as the winner is This Is the Police.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Because that game is incredibly simple, but what we added to it made it a drastically better game.
It was a fun stream. It was a very fun stream. I know you streamed it again.
No, I didn't stream it again, but I played it again with Craig. Yeah, so that's right. What I had the most, like, because the game is incredibly simple. It's, yeah, you know, as for those who don't know, like, it's you run, you're the commissioner, you're like the police captain, the guy that runs it, whatever the hell that guy is. You're like, you have to survive 100 days before you retire. And in that time, you've got to, like, please gang, you know, gang bosses and all stuff. Keep
the peace.
Keep the peace until you retire. Shit goes down in that 100 days, like crazy shit. Yeah. And there's a bunch of different things you need to do. But
you lose
your
best lieutenant. Captain Price,
you piece of shit.
Fucking worst cop.
This is what we did. And that was the fun. See, that was the fun. The fun was taking what was a bunch of, like, 8 faceless, well, they're faces, but they're faceless people with names. We had no idea who they were. We had Price. We had, you know, like, this is names, right? We created scenarios. We created backstories. We created motivations for these people.
Price, legit, we fired her and she got drunk, crashed her car and died.
Yeah.
And that was on us. I wasn't ready for that at the time because I was like, oh, fuck this bitch. She's a shit
cop. She rocked up drunk again.
Yeah, she came drunk a couple of times. Like, just get out. Just leave. And then the next day, she got drunk. Like her last her car day. And died. Yeah.
See, that's the thing. It's like, because we even though she was a shit character, we wanted her gone, we formed that attachment. Like, we should have kept her.
We caused her death.
We should have trained her. We should have kept her alive.
Yeah.
And when Craig and I played it again, we're just sort of playing with these two people that we'd always send off together just because they just happened to be like
the A team.
The similar levels. Yeah, that were the A team. And every time we sent them to a job, it would come back crystal clear. Perfect.
Yeah.
So like, holy shit. So every job was like, all right, these two boys are on it. And like, Craig and I created what was the beginnings of buddy cop movie with these two guys. We would tell stories and we'd bullshit and like, we would make them do like, there was different, depending on the mission, they would give you scenarios when you got there. So rather than just, you know,
going through locking the front door, going through the door, window.
And it was like, buddy cop movie, fucking through the window. Yeah. And every time, no matter the craziest shit that we selected, they always came out with the perk.
Yeah, it was looking like, to me, it was a blip on the radar, but looking back at it, I'm like, yeah, it's actually a very fun and good game.
And like, yeah, so,
but a game that I probably would only enjoy playing in company.
Yes.
Not by myself.
Yeah, yeah. See, like, I want to play it again, but I think the most fun of it comes from us and like Craig.
Just
and
playing with other people.
It was, an unexpected highlight of my year, and I loved it so much just for the dumb shit. Craig even wrote a short story about the two characters. Literally.
Wow.
So good.
All right, well, heading over to the community's top picks for their best game played this year, starting at the top again with Max. Best game played is Fortnite.
Good answer. I was also considered putting PUBG on the list, seeing as it hasn't released this year. I've had a lot of fun with PUBG.
Has now. Version 1.0 dropped the other day.
That's true, but not before we selected our games.
Oh, if you couldn't change it on the fly.
No.
Whatever. Buddy, best game played, Horizon Zero Dawn or Everybody's Golf.
Nice work, buddy.
Justin Hatsy O'Neill, best game played, Squad. I don't know what that is. Sorry, Justin, I don't know what that is. Please educate us if you can. Dave, best game played, Mario Kart 8 on the Switch.
I agree. I think Mario Kart, well, like I, when we reviewed it, when we back when we did scores, I gave it a perfect score. I think it was a fantastic game.
Chris Conway, best game played, Rising Storm 2 Vietnam.
Sure.
Sorry, man, I don't know what that is either. Joel, best game played Horizon for this year or Shovel Knight for a year before?
Yeah, you jumped back into Shovel Knight.
I did. I actually really, really like Shovel Knight. That's in a different category for me, though. And Jess, best game played, Hidden Agenda or Knowledge is Power?
Jess loving
the Playlink games.
She went back and did a lot more playing because we've been chatting. Yeah.
And Jacob Garner, best game played, Tales from the Borderlands. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Mm. That was free
on the PS Plus this year.
Hands down, the best work Telltale have put out. Fuck, The Walking Dead is good. Tales from the Borderlands is the best by a long shot. By a long shot.
Well, do you want? I was thinking about putting PUBG on this list. Let's stick to my PUBG just a little bit.
How long do you want this episode to go for?
Not that long.
Let's talk PUBG then.
I feel we should acknowledge it. Nothing has taken over the gaming space like PUBG.
PUBG, we don't have a category for this. Yeah. I'll make one now. PUBG is my
best and worst
biggest
game.
Regretful purchase.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah.
Why?
It's clunky as hell.
We've been trying. Have you tried 1.0 yet?
I love it. No.
Not me either.
I love it. But I fucking hate it with a passion. Mm. But when I start the game and it plays and it works for a whole match, sweet, this game is rad. But it's only one in every 10 matches that happens.
You have a lot of weird network lag going on.
Yeah, and it's only PUBG. I don't understand. I've gone as far as Googling it to like people with similar issues, opening ports in my router and, you know, the firewall stuff, and nothing helped. But
We'll try again with 1.0 and see if it fixes it.
I guess I'm just salty that it did get nominated for Game of the Year because it shouldn't have.
No,
maybe they need to make a category for something that like takes the gaming world by storm, because I agree that it did, and it's created this whole phenomenon. Like, and new Twitch streamers, you know, now have a career streaming PUBG. It's amazing, but it is not Game of the Year material. Just because it sold well and has done a lot in that space doesn't make it gamey. To put it next to games like Zelda and Mario and Horizon, to put it in that same category is heresy.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. But when we did stream it and I played for the first time, at the time of my life, I had the time of my life. We even got a t-shirt meme out of it. Keep calm, find a puffy jacket, swim away. Like that 3 minutes of, you know, jumping off the bridge and swimming and then him flying past me, like that 3 minutes was incredible, and the chat's going, what the fuck's going on? And it was amazing. But
there's clutch moments, yeah.
Yeah, but there are times where I'm playing and it just feels like it's a mod. You know, it's a mod. And I know it is, but it feels like one, and it shouldn't at this point. Having said that, I haven't played 1.0 and I haven't tried the test servers. So
the
my opinion on it now might be outdated.
1.0 is one of the test server builds. Like, I dived into the test server with the release of the new map, and the new map's great. And if that was what 1.0 is, it's a much better game.
I believe it is, because the patch is 13 gig.
Yeah, it's a much better game. Like, it's the test server brought in a bunch of new things that change gameplay. There's new guns, obviously. There's new vehicles. You can vault over things. So you no longer have to, like, stop at a fence and go...
get a run-up.
Yeah, you can just go... Whoop, vault over. Like, it changes how you play.
Yeah.
And it looks sharp. The menus are, like, it's cleaner overall.
I know they've added a lot of guns. They added 5 new guns, I think, as well. But
I've dived into 1.0 and like I've put like 30 something hours into this game, because it's a perfect game to like have one, like go in, play one, because that one round could be 10 minutes, could be 20 minutes, could be, you know, whatever. Mm. Like, I'm yet to find another game that gives me such an adrenaline, like, exhilaration.
So I get that.
It's
for
so damn good, and I kind of I loved it, but at the same point, like, it's a fucking broken ass game.
My adrenaline comes from when I'm parachuting down and I land, network lag detected. Mm. All right, let's see if I'm alive by the end of this. Oh, I'm not. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, see, I normally play it safe and land, you know, just off the route a little bit. I've recently got a bit more risky.
Mm.
I got into a fist fight with someone the other day.
Yeah. I did have a fun fist fight.
They're picking up a gun and I'm like, boo! I do a Superman punch and they're like, that was amazing.
Yeah, well, I had the same thing. This is the last game I played, which is about 2 weeks ago. I haven't touched it for a while.
Get the 1.0 down.
I've already
tried it again. Oh, fantastic.
I landed, he landed, same house, We both run into the house, like, looking for shit. I found nothing. I'm like, fuck. I open the door to go outside. I'm like, free kill. Look at him. He's got nothing either. And we're like... So we start smacking into each other and I'm losing, so I start running away and I run up the balcony and he chases me, but he gets stuck on like the corner of the balcony. So I jumped off the balcony and fucking KO'd him with the Superman punch and I was like, this is the best shit ever. And I know I'm all over the place with this because I can't...
That's how you feel. That's what this game
how
does.
I feel. I don't know. And having said that, I know a lot of the fun comes from playing with friends and I haven't done that yet. I mean, I played with you and Jess one night for about an hour.
Yep.
But I was getting connectivity issues again.
Yeah, we need to try it again and do it properly. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I'm keen to jump back into it, but at this point, I just wish I didn't buy it because it's a waste of $40 because I can't see me wanting to go back to it.
Yeah, depending on what the change is 1.0, like you said, I think I've already got my money out of it.
Mm. Oh, you definitely have. Yeah. Well, so I've put in about 20 hours.
Yeah.
$40 for 20 hours, you know, depending on your opinion. But I got my money out of it. But at the same time, I'm like, I wish I didn't buy it.
Yeah, but I also know I would have spent that $40 somewhere else dumb. So
yeah.
For me, it wasn't too bad.
But I've had this pullback from online games recently as well. Because they make me really cross. And they shouldn't. I get too invested. I don't know why. Just recently, I just get too invested.
Which is good.
Yeah, not for my cholesterol levels. I mean, my blood pressure.
Yeah. Well, PUBG being one of the biggest games that's come out this year, but we should also mention it's also a very independent game. So we're going to bring the next category up, which is the best independent game. So these were games that weren't backed by a big-time studio.
Yeah. Not Sony, not Bethesda, EA, Activision, none of that.
Microsoft, nothing. So that does throw Cuphead out, because Cuphead was backed by Microsoft. It was backed by Microsoft.
It was, but it's not. It's a $20 game. It's not a AAA. I wouldn't call it a AAA.
But you're basing the AAA. But you're basing the independent amount around its price. Doesn't make sense.
It does.
You can still have a funded game by a big.
But
company.
Cuphead was in the works before Microsoft decided to buy the exclusivity as well.
Yeah, I suppose. I wouldn't. I didn't put it on my list.
It's not even on my list. Mm. But it's definitely an indie game. Maybe a first party indie.
Yeah.
Exclusive indie.
It's a grey area.
It's definitely an indie game, independent game though.
Sure. Why not?
So I had a tough time with this one because my top pick is a game that released on a certain console this year, but was actually out last year. But I only played it on this console this year. So for me it released
so
this
talk
year.
About the game rather than the console. That helps.
Well, Stardew Valley.
Yeah. It's a given. I need to repeat that.
I don't know if it was...
You put this category in just so we could talk about Stardew Valley.
Pretty much. So I don't know if this was because of when it released, because we were away for the weekend. First trip with the Switch, you know, first chance to really kind of get the teeth into the Switch, you know, it's cool for travel and all that kind of stuff. So it released midnight-ish on the first night we were there. I was tired. I went to bed. I said, dude, when it's on the eShop, come and wake me up. And you did, so thank you. I started the download tethered from my phone and it was going at like 200 kilobytes a second. I was about to sleep. But I ended up sinking about 80 hours into it. Just on the first save file. Didn't restart when I fucked up or anything. It got me. It got me so hard.
You get it. Now you understand my love for farming games. Yeah,
and... You know, I've read a couple of AMAs that the developers had Chucklefish, and he just seems like such a humble, nice guy as well, and who can't believe the success that Stardew Valley has had.
Fantastic read. So this year as well, Jason Schreier, one of the games journalists from Kotaku, released a book called Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. Mm. An entire chapter in that is about Stardew Valley and about how he just sort of made it in the back room of his house.
Yeah, and he's been developing it for five plus years.
The story is fantastic. Because they talk about how him and his wife bonded over Harvest Moon Back to Nature. I'm like...
See, I've never been into farming games before.
Yeah.
I think mainly because I don't want to play them on my telly. Farming games to me is something I want to play while doing something else. So that's the appeal of Stardew is I could watch my TV shows or my movies while just, you know, getting some crops and fishing and going down the mines and all that kind of stuff. There's not much more I can say about it, really. It's just one of the best... One of the best games this year by far, but it didn't release this year, technically.
Yeah. But it was my game of the year last year.
But it came to Switch this year, so that's why it's my best indie game this year. And, you know, such a runaway success. The subreddit is a lot of fun as well. You know, people sharing their unique farmland, farmscapes, everything, looking at them and going, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll do that.
Reshuffling your farm.
It lost me halfway through winter of year two, because during winter, nothing grows, of course. So that's your opportunity. It's like, let's get to the bottom of the mines. Let's finish the community center. So I'd already been to the bottom of the mines. I'd already finished the community center. I remodeled my entire... I destroyed everything. Everything. And I started from scratch again, just rebuilding the farm. Now pretty much a brewery, a meadery. I make beer and wine. That's what I make at mine. But halfway through winter year two, and I'm like, it's another 2 weeks and I've really got nothing to do. So that's where it kind of lost me.
That's where you start engaging with the townsfolk.
I already... Yeah, but I don't care. I'm married to Abigail, you know. She wanted to have a kid. I didn't, because I'm escaping reality in this game. so I kind of lost me there, but it cost me $17 and I got 80 plus hours out of it. Mm. And it's something I can go back to and try it on a different farm, because you can choose.
Different layouts,
you
know, like an island.
The river layout and all that. So I'll definitely go back to it one day. But just such a runaway success that I wasn't expecting to take me. I knew I'd enjoy it, but not like that.
Yeah, as I mentioned, Stardew Valley was my game of the year last year. So having it come out again this year, I'm like, yep. So it made my shortlist. Yeah. Given, like, why the hell wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So I had three for my shortlist. The second was Yonder, the Cloud Catcher Chronicles. Was this cool independent game out of Sydney. I liked it because it didn't have combat.
Mm-hmm.
In games that are surrounded by shooting and like explosions, and it was very chill. It was this big open world, like. It in the selling point, it was promised to be like Harvest Moon meets Zelda meets all this other stuff, and like, yeah, sort of.
Mm.
Like, I didn't have farming in the way of Harvest Moon, but it was very zen, very chill, and it's
really
exploratory.
Yeah,
very exploratory, and I think I said that right. And just a lot of fetch quests, but what else do you do when there's no combat? You just kind of wander around and chill.
Yeah.
But my number one of the simply because I didn't want to do Stardew Valley again. You know what it is?
Pretty sure I know what it is. Do you want me to say it?
Yeah, sure.
Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice.
No.
What?
Because that's why it's one of my Game of the Year noms.
Oh, shit.
No, my winner was Golf Story on the Switch.
Of course, Golf Story.
Yeah, Golf Story. It's got the zen of everybody's golf with the RPG elements of RPGs. Like, it's RPG golf. Like, how can that be bad?
It's funny. It sounds so boring on paper.
It's awesome.
But because you were playing it while waiting for Stardew to come out. And I was watching you play it. I'm like, it's kind of cool, actually.
It's very similar. Like, it's a nice sort of like pixel art style, which adds to its charm. And then they have different different courses, different like lands. There's like a, you know, caveman people, and they have like a cave, like prehistoric style. It's just the difference. And granted, the gameplay is the same. It's all golf. It's really charming and really cool. I had a lot of time with it.
Yeah, like I said, just in the name... It just sounds really boring. What are you playing? Golf Story. Ooh.
It's Australian as well.
Yeah, but then, you know, looking at it, and, you know, it does have quite a large following as well.
Hellblade was fantastic, and, like, that's why it's not best indie, but
later.
It's in my game of the year.
All right, community picks for best indie game this year, starting with Max, Cuphead.
Yeah.
I'll allow it. Buddy Watson, Life is Strange.
Interesting.
Justin Hatzio Neil, Battle Brothers.
Man,
I feel like Justin's playing all these games.
Just Buzz, you played some weird games, dude.
Dave, Indie, Stardew Valley Switch.
Champion.
Indie, Cuphead for Chris Conway. Hard as hell, but had so much fun.
We did have a lot of fun. Like, credit to Cuphead, we did have a lot of fun in that stream. Like, it was
for Joel,
very good.
Indie, Doki Doki Literature Club. This game has taken the world by storm.
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah, it's free too. So from what I've seen of it, it's like a visual novel. You know, you go to a...
But kind of takes all those tropes. And
yeah, but then like if... I don't know if it's spoilers, but the game ends up just getting really fucked up towards... Like, one of the tags in the game is psychological horror, and you actually need to, like... During the game, you're instructed to go into, like, the game's config files and alter things and all. Sounds really interesting. I'm keen to give that
a go. Yeah, here we go, for free.
Jess, biggest best indie, Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice.
Given.
We will talk about that more shortly. And Jacob Garner, Life is Strange.
Damn.
Life is Strange I couldn't get into. I tried. Neither. I tried, because I like that style of game, but I don't know. It just... Because season one, episode one was free recently-ish.
I'm pretty sure the whole season was free.
The whole season was free. So I started it, but I don't know. It's
because the sequel released this year, and that was the big thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Now we get into the nitty-gritty.
Now, you said bring three.
Uh-huh.
I bought five.
Oh, you're a fucking wanker.
For all for different reasons.
Yeah.
What? Okay. Okay. So, do we want to like? How do we want to do this?
We'll get. So you've brought five. Are they ordered in your head though?
No.
Oh my god.
I know.
Been planning this episode for a month.
Yeah.
Well, you tell me. How do you want to do this then?
I don't know.
You're the one throwing the spanner in the works.
Go your runners up. And
I don't have runners up.
You should have picked three. That's the point. You told me to pick three.
Yeah.
So what? So what's your number one? And then what are your two runners up?
No, we did runners up first and we worked towards them.
That's what I'm saying. You do your runners up, I'll do my runners up, and then we go to our finals.
No, I'll do a runner up, and then you do a runner
up. Okay, sure. But I might have to do two runners up.
I do one, you do two. Yeah. Okay. So number three for me this year. It was a really hard year, by the way.
Yeah, I'm looking at my five now. I'm like, God damn it.
Number three for me this year was Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, it's on my list as well, so I can bounce off that.
Okay. So I think I said this before in another episode. I don't know when it was recently. That not just because it was a fantastic game, but because of what it means for Guerrilla as a studio as well. You know, they've done five Killzone titles to the point of Horizon. Mm. You know, you got your three mainline and two on the Vita, I think. Or one on the Vita and like a side story thing. There's five Killzones. And it was always just, it was there. It was probably made to compete with Halo, Halo back in the day.
Two on PS2, one on PS3, one on PS4, and one Vita.
Yeah. So it's probably made to compete with Halo back in the day.
It was the Halo killer. That was their marketing.
You should never, ever market a game as a killer of another popular game. Nope. Just ask any MMO that's come out of the WoW killer. But yeah, so what it means for Guerrilla as a studio is they've gone from a Sony studio to one of the...
To a marquee.
Yeah, to a marquee Sony, like probably only behind Naughty Dog, really, at this point. Not only that, in the same year, they released an incredible expansion, what I labelled as the perfect expansion, because it really was. But what they made, like, there's very much open world fatigue going on these days, because, you know, everything has to have an open world and yada yada. But so they did that, but the world's very dense, for starters. It's not the biggest map you'll find in the open world, but there's heaps of shit to do. And they just made not only incredible landscape with incredible ideas with, you know, obviously the robot animals, the mecha dinosaurs and stuff, but the story was just so unique and original. And, you know, where you're, you know, living as a tribe, but you're 1,000 years in the future, and, you know, you spend the story kind of figuring out what happened and why, and it's so fascinating. And it kind of goes as deep as you want, you know, reading all the data logs and all that kind of stuff if you want to. You don't have to. You can just power through it if you want. But I read every single data log I came across. I listened to every single voice log I found. I actively sought them out. And it just kept building and building and building into this just amazing story. And, yeah, out of the official Game of the Year listings that was 2 weeks ago, I believe it should have won out of what it was up against. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe. I might be a bit hyperbolic there, but it's one of the, you know, PlayStation have a huge new franchise on their hands, very marketable. You know, it's awesome. I watched NoClip just did a video on Horizon.
Like an hour long.
Hour long video on Horizon. And, you know, Aloy being a female obviously brings in a different group of people to play this kind of game.
It made Jess buy a PS4.
Yeah, and she's not just female for the sake of being female. It works, but it's never used against her in that way. Like, she's never... They never portray her as that strong female woman trying to forge her own way, even though she is. It's just a very natural story. Her being a female has nothing to do with it. You know, her gender has nothing to do with it. I think that's fantastic. Yeah, great new character, great new franchise.
I agree with pretty much everything you said. Now, I as always, didn't finish it. But only because it came out in a very nuts time of the year. Like, shit just started happening.
I had the benefit... Oh, sorry, when that game came out, I didn't buy a Switch. Yeah. I didn't get a Switch on launch. I waited about a month. So I had that whole month to pretty much just play Horizon.
Yeah, well, I was bouncing between that and Zelda to sort of try and get stuff, content out for that and whatnot. Mm. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I believe... Yeah, the character is what sold me on that game. Like, mecha dinosaurs, like, fuck yeah. Like, it was so much fun finding new dinosaurs and how to take them down and be that struck using that sort of tactical element of, like, setting up traps and, you know, trying to break down how you would tackle this situation. That was really cool. But for me, a lot of it came from the relationship between Aloy and Rost. Her father figure?
Rost, yeah.
So her father figure and them at the start and bonding and building this relationship, and then, spoilers, he exits the picture. And it's all about her forging her way on her own a little bit, and then trying to find her history, her heritage. Cause
and then that bleeds into this whole bigger story.
Yeah, what happened in the past. So I was only like, where I got up to, I was only just touching that story. Because like, I kind of did everything that was around me. Like how I, you know, rather than the main story, which I probably, if I, the amount of time I put in the game, I probably could finish the main story.
Yeah, you could probably finish the main story in about 20
hours. But I dicked around. I did nothing but everything else.
Yeah.
So like the 20 or so hours that I put into it, I was probably barely scratched the surface of the story because I was just having so much fun everywhere else. But yeah, like the performance was great. Ashley Birch did incredible job as Aloy. There were some hiccups, of course, like weird cuts when you're talking to people. They're like, oh yeah, yeah.
The camera just lingered for like 2 seconds too away, long yeah. sometimes.
I really like the idea of these different tribes and just the way that they each do different things. And then there's like the, you know, the elders, which are all women as well, which I thought was really interesting. And I don't know, I really enjoyed Horizon a lot. I think it was, having not touched Frozen Wilds, I think it was a great game. And now that I've got my 2 weeks off, it's a game that I'm planning to finish.
Yeah, it's just created a fascinating world. And then, you know, even going into you can find out through the game exactly where you are on Earth. You know, the area that, your whole map and the area that you're in for that whole game, you can find out exactly where it is if you dig deep enough. You might not know. People might have finished the game and have no idea where it fucking took place. But if you dig deep enough, all the information is there. Really incredible. Really incredible.
Speaking of strong female leads, though, this brings us into, you know, you talked about Guerrilla Games being the second tier of the PlayStation first parties. This one is from the top tier. This is Naughty Dog with Uncharted The Lost Legacy. I had such a good time with it. It was an 8-hour experience, like one of the only games I finished this year. This year. So like, because you said, can you have to finish the game? I'm like, well, I might as well put it on there because I finished it, right?
So it's there just because.
No, and I did thoroughly love it. Like, it took the best parts of Uncharted and condensed it. Uncharted 4, as fantastic as it was, it did pull a little bit too long in some places. And this is just the second act of an Uncharted story. There's no introduction. There's very limited introduction. It's all action. None of the weird supernatural shit from the first three. So it's just this middle bit. Fucking awesome. Get to dive into two characters that didn't quite get enough screen time in previous games with... oh god, Nadine and Chloe. I'm gonna say Claudia.
Didn't even play it.
No, Claudia is the name of the actress. I'm like Claudia. I'm like, wait a minute, and Chloe. Chloe is fantastic. She's such an interesting character, and she has such a complicated and riveting backstory because she's got this. She's literally Indian Australian, so it's this weird sort of like. That's why she fits so well in the Indian style of like finding the Tusk of Ganesh and or that. So she had that knowledge to back her up, and the Aussie gave her, I guess, a way for me to relate to her as a character, and how she spoke was very interesting. There were certain words that had that real Aussie twang to them, and it was just like, you know, when she called a character a dickhead, and it's like,
you dickhead.
Yeah, she has this real kind of like very nice English accent. Oh, it's like a dickhead. And like it was so much fun. And like Nadine was great. I certainly didn't think they gave her, I didn't find her an endearing character in Uncharted 4. So having her in this, I was like, okay. And I left Uncharted 4 going, okay.
Yeah. Chloe was probably the big focal point.
She's the focal point. She's the Nathan Drake of this one. And there is another character that does pop up. It's not Nathan Drake's. But another character does pop up in the tail end of the story, and they add a big twist on it. I would tell you who it is, but I don't want to put on the video as well.
I'll play it eventually. I don't want to know.
Yeah, so it's on the pop seeker. But yeah, so when the third character comes in, it adds a nice dynamic between the two women, and it brings in the familiar. It's lovely. The game was great. I enjoyed it so much. It was fantastic.
Cool. So I've done one, you've done two. Now I do one and you do another two, right? Okay, my second pick for a game here. Now, this is really hard because I feel like if I had the time to give this game more time, it could be number one. Nier Automata.
Oh, no shit.
No surprise there.
Yeah, but not, I thought it might be number one.
Nah. Well, like I said, it possibly could be if I had, because I only got it last week. I put in 20 hours, it's not enough. Wow. Wow. I mean, this game, it's as Japanese as it can get, which is fine because I love that kind of thing. Just so many things. One, the world itself, I don't know how far you got, but the world keeps kind of getting weirder and weirder. You know, you are.
I've not put it like up for about 5 hours on that.
Okay, so you are 2B, you're an android. Aliens came to Earth 100 years ago, brought up all these machines, wiped the Earth, people are living in space. They send the androids down to try to, like, kill the aliens and the robots and, you know,
so the world's, take Earth back. The world's inhabitable back. Yeah.
Take Earth back, yeah. So probably the thing I love the most is, one, the combat, which, as I said before, was done by Platinum Games. Very fast-paced, you know, with your dodging and your different weapon swapping and different combos. But how the changes of perspective that you get a lot. So the game starts as a top-down shooter, then it turns into like a 3D top-down shooter, and then it's a 3D action platformer.
It changes genre of game.
It changes genre.
So, like, four times in the first 20 minutes.
And then you get side-scrolling platformer to side-scrolling action game, then the camera pans back up, and it does it frequently enough that it's a welcome change, but not so frequently that it's like, oh, this again. Mm. Like, it doesn't play on that trope a lot. It does it where it makes sense for whatever section of the game that you're playing. And it just keeps the game pretty fresh, yeah?
That's one of the big, like, the game design in this is phenomenal in terms of that. Like, I think that's probably why I outside of Kojima games and, like, the occasional JRPG here and there, like, I'm not really drawn to Japanese games. I used to be when I was younger, but as I've gotten older, I haven't been. But there is something about this in such a way that is drawing me in and makes me want to think about it.
It's very charming.
And I think that's what it is. I think it's the game design and changing of the different gameplay styles. Like,
have you gotten to the amusement park yet?
No,
that's where it got me.
Yeah,
I've only just.
I'm back up in the station.
You head to the resistance camp next.
Yeah, and then I've just met with the elders or whatever the hell they are, and they've just sent me back. Yep.
The amusement park is where it got me. It's pretty much the next section you'll be in. It's cool. Where I walk, you know, come around the corner. There's the amusement park, and I just kind of went, like, I nearly cried. I was like, this is incredible. The story is really fucking good. The 26 endings.
Yeah,
it might seem daunting.
I've discovered three of them by accident.
Yeah. So it might seem daunting, but 21 of them are like joke endings, like when you fuck up in a certain spot. It's like, well, because you fucked up, blah, 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 everyone's dead, roll credits, really quickly.
Yeah. So I was fighting one of the first bosses, which is like these two big cranes that attack you at the same time. Yeah. And it killed me. It's like, the game ended by blah. I'm like,
what?
And I'm like, whatever. And then I finally survive that, and I go into the little space station thing, and there's like a...
You didn't realize to save, did you?
No, because...
Initially.
The game couldn't let me save.
When you get in the space station, you
Once I'm at the... Because up until the space station, one doesn't let you save. Like, there's no, like, autosave. So I was like, fuck.
I'll
like,
tell you that.
To be like, it does. And I'm like, that's a really cool idea. And then like...
Back to
actually,
the start.
What I should mention is the first night I played it, I was, like, playing, and I'm like, I'm really tired. Turned the console off, went to bed. Forgetting that it doesn't save. Came back and I went,
fuck.
So then I do that one bit again, and then I got my ass hammered to me by the cranes. I'm like, fuck this game. Then I came back, and then and my second surprise death I got was up at the space station. There was a little kiosk, like buy and sell items. I'm like, OS chip. I don't know what that is. I've got two of them.
It's your operating system.
Yeah, like the credits, and it's like end. I'm like,
happened? It gives you a brief summary of like, I even had one where it's like, you know, such and such is attacking here. Go, like, all your units, go there now and save it. And I'm like, oh, I want to go do this side mission first. It's like, and I'm leaving the area, and the little pod unit that's with you is like, if you leave, it's going to, you know, you can't, cuts out, and it's like, because you left the area, 2B left, never to be seen again. The Goliath destroyed the town, and but having said that, I got through... It's not a game that you play once. No, you play through it three or four times. Yeah. Mm. And that sounds kind of daunting. It's like,
apparently it changes every time.
It does, though. So I'm halfway through the second playthrough. And they're really clever in the way they change it just enough each time for you to get the familiar story beats. But you're also going, hang on. This is going a little bit deeper. Because when you finish your first playthrough, that's ending A. You finish your first, it's ending A. And then again, it's ending B. When you finish the first playthrough, it rolled the credits. I was like, what the fuck? It's like, that didn't answer this, didn't answer this. I don't know what's happening with this. Then you get a nice message from Square saying, hey, thanks for playing. I know you finished. Nier is a game to be enjoyed multiple times. Jump in again. and you'll see kind of what we're getting at here. So I did jump in and I was like, oh shit, like, wow, that's incredible. And then I'm sure it's going to do it again on the third playthrough. The replayability is great. How the systems work is great. I like how saving is like you're uploading your data to the bunker. You need to be near like access points, like Wi-Fi signal, to be able to save, because you're sending your save data up to the bunker. How all your combat upgrades and all that are like operating systems, like RAM slots that you like. You get like a set. Here's like your RAM slots, and you know this attack upgrade will take, you know, two spots, and then this one will take three, and you're kind of putting in chips to upgrade yourself how you want and all that. And the music, man, the music is just amazing. Did it win best soundtrack?
Potentially.
I think it did win at the official Game of the Year awards. Deserves it. I mean, I want you to play it, at least get to the amusement park, because that's where it really kind of hit me. I'm like, wow, this is something really different. Like, this is so incredibly unique. I'm hoping you'll have the same thing.
I think my attachment came from a couple of different ways. So, being a big love of Kojima Games, Metal Gear Solid, one of the things that it does is when you get a comm, it's brruh, brruh, and it's very reminiscent of the comm noise in Metal Gear. Okay. So here I'm like, oh. Ooh, ooh. I'm like, it's six part of my brain. I'm like, oh. Ooh. Yeah. And the same, once again, the same thing with Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty. You run around, I run a lot around a tanker. So there's a lot of great floors. So yeah, tung, 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 tung. Like,
chung, chung,
and that's
chung, chung,
entire yeah. first mission is just running on great. So I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on top of that, all the additional cool stuff kind of too interesting. It's not on my list, but I really enjoyed the game.
It's a very, very unique and original game. And I feel like if I could have played it enough to get the true ending, that it probably would have been my game of the year. Unfortunately, I left it a little bit too late. I didn't realize that it needed multiple playthroughs to kind of get through it. But yeah, fucking awesome. I'm so glad to have played it this year.
Should mention another female lead.
Another female lead.
Speaking of female leads.
Another female lead for the first playthrough.
Yes. Oh.
Wink. What cool. are your next two?
My next two, speaking of female leads, is Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice. This game is fucking insane in the best possible way. Like, what I loved about it was the little details, especially when it boots up. It's like when I remember hearing about it being in this game that sort of looks at, you know, like Celtic and Nordic mythology with a very strong look and position on mental illness and mental health. I'm like, all right. So when I boot up the game and, you know, Senua's, you know, in a little boat and she's heading in and the game's like, works best with headphones. I'm like, all right.
Okay. So you normally see that on a horror game and I go, fuck you. Yep. I'm not wearing headphones.
Yeah,
I'm like,
okay, let's just see how we go. Put it on. All right, cool. And she's going in, she's telling her story. And as she's telling her story, the credits are coming up. And what I speaking of like the Nordic stuff, like the first two things that come up, mental health advisor, historical advisor. I'm like, okay, interesting. Moving on forward. And then as Senua's going in, like she's telling your whole story and why she's there. And the whole idea is trying to essentially save her lover, her partner from a Celtic hell or Nordic hell.
Mm-hmm.
Nordic hell. And the whole time she's battling psychosis. And so that, like, it's fucking rad because you're essentially going down their version of the River Styx almost. Yeah, that's what it feels like because there's shit going down along the side. And this game is just fucking visually stunning.
See, I didn't get to play it this year. That's probably my biggest regret this year is I didn't find the time for Hellblade. Yeah, but what I love most about it from not having played it is that Ninja Theory have kind of, you know, redefined, like, it's a AAA indie title. Like, how do you label it? You know, it's an indie game, obviously, but it's not an indie. Like, it's more than that. And the fact that it, one, like, looks how it does, and that it's got all the, you know, all the scores and everything, and it's half the price of a, you know, AAA game. You know, Ninja Theory have really, like, done something in, like, something meaningful with Hellblade.
Having an independent game, it means they could focus on different places rather than having to worry about hitting the most audience. I mean, like, that independent look at it and put it in a new place. So one of the greatest stories to come out of this is the actress of Senua. Her name, Milena, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
She won the best performance from.
I loved her speech.
Oh my god! For the best performance from the official Game Awards,
beating out Chloe,
beating out Claudia Black, Ashley Birch, you know, like these big fucking names, like, and, you know, oh, so good. Like
her
original story was she was a content producer for the Ninja Theory. Her job was to make behind the scenes videos, upload them on YouTube, show the process of the game. And they're like, we're trying to find an actress, but we've got this new technology, which I'll get to in a minute. Then we need someone to fill the spot. Can you jump in because you're a woman and you get the, you know, similar body shape?
You
fit the profile of what we're after. Can you do it? She's like, yeah, sure, why not? And then she started doing performance and motion capture and all this stuff. She's like, you're fucking killing it. Do you want to do it? And she's like, what?
like deer in the headlights. Like,
yeah, she's like, what? Because like she's never been an actress before. This is her first gig. I love
it. First thing she says in her speech, she's like, I'm not an actress. And everyone's just like, yes! And it was really touching speech, actually.
The big, the best thing about this game is the technology behind it. What they've done is they've done essentially, it's like in real-time motion capture. So they strap a big fucking camera to the front of her face, and her face is decked out in all the dots. And because it is such a very personal and focused story on Senua, everything she does with her face and her movements are so precise that it really helps push that emotion further and really tell an incredibly connecting story. And that technology is what makes that. Mm. Because the performance on Melina alone is, you know, like you see her sadness, you see her anguish, like all in subtle face movements, like beautiful subtle face movements.
Speech not needed, right?
Speech not needed. There are moments where like she doesn't, because she's by herself most of the time. She doesn't really say much. Speaking of saying much, another thing that's incredible about this game, sound design. So because she has psychosis, the whole idea is that she hears voices. There's a number of different voices, and they all do different things. They'll have one that's obviously very negative, one that's very positive, and one that's sort of, you know, in the middle.
Sorry, did you just burp under your breath?
A little bit.
I smelt your chicken kebab.
Yeah, sure did.
I sure did. Sorry, go on.
So, as like the couple of different voices, and they all tell you different things. And they did a really interesting thing when they recorded this. They used positional audio. So what they did is they had a room, and in the middle of the room was the microphone shaped like ears, so you'd get the same resonance that you would get with your regular ears, and they had people walk around while they were talking to sort of add that sort of horrifying box, trap box feeling.
Hence the headphones.
So you got the headphones on, and you do feel enclosed because sometimes the voice will be in a distance, and sometimes it's fucking right up in your ear.
So like a jumpish kind of thing. Yeah,
it'll be like. We all have quote unquote voices in our head, like it's more of self thought, like not something, the thoughts, internal thought. But this is like
you
internal,
don't hear it.
Yeah, this is internal thought on a different level because they're all. My internal thought is still my own voice, right? But having the whole idea of hearing nothing but other people's voices, and they're coming in at different times and different waves and different volumes, it's really quite jarring. But because there is literally no HUD, there's still combat, but there's no HUD. So you don't really see where people are in space. But you know, if you're fighting a bunch of people, there's one, like if there's one behind you, the voice will be like behind you, and you know to duck out of the way because someone behind you, or to your left, and a block, you know, like it gives you like very subtle cues to keep you sort of on your toes. It's the whole, for lack of a better word, mechanic is fucking beautiful.
Well, it's been praised by, you know, medical professionals of like getting it right, like that. This like they've played it and obviously been consulted on it, because Ninja Theory obviously did very heavy research and actually had people helping them that suffered from psychosis and similar mental disorders. So they really did their research properly. And what's even like the little cherry on top is that one day where it's like all proceeds go to
mental health awareness.
And what did they get? Like
half a million dollars
in like a day?
Yeah.
Insane.
I bet people bought multiple copies of the game that day.
I
highly recommend you spend $30 and pick it up.
Yeah, no, I definitely will. It's a very interesting and unique story for the year as a whole. You know, Ninja Theory, what they did with Hellblade stands out as like this is something of note that happened in 2017.
Yeah, like there are moments where the gameplay kind of slows down and sort of the puzzle moments where it starts to feel real gamey. But other than that, it's this beautiful story and it's always pushing you forward and it's just fantastic.
Okay, well, you've got to do another one as well.
All right. South Park, The Fractured Butthole. I thought this game may have been my number one. I was like, but it's certainly in there. It probably is my top two. simply because no game has made me laugh out loud like South Park. It's not quite as in-your-face offensive as Stick of Truth was, but it was still edgy, like edgy, and it was funny, and it was like on topic, and it was great, and like they really dived in on the, they were very self-aware of the superhero side of things, and as a result, that, that added into the gameplay as well in terms of all your different characters, and I loved it so much. I finished it. I still am like that's my two games I plan to finish over the break.
I found it kind of dull.
Oh wow!
Like, because I put in about, I don't know, 12 hours roughly. The combat got very.
That's why it's not number one.
But even the humor just didn't get me. Like, I'm a South Park fan as well, nowhere near as much as you are. But I remember the Stick of Truth had me laughing my ass off, and I got some chuckles here, of course. But a lot of the time, I was like. And I could call the joke coming. It's like, and now the Cartman's going to say something really offensive for the punchline. There it is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's just the gameplay. I enjoyed exploring South Park, and then obviously getting, you know, the new farts to like access new areas. You know, stopping time and throwing cupcakes and all that kind of stuff. But as far as I know, the story to me was like, it wasn't really that interesting, and the combat after a while just got. Annoying more than any, like, not even like, okay, like, let's get through the battles. Like, you get into a fight, it's like,
That is certainly true. Outside of the boss-ish battles,
were fun.
Outside of the boss-ish battles, the combat was kind of a bit monotonous. Like, anytime that someone tried to fight me in the street, I'm like, nope.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. But the boss battles were fun because they all had something unique. Like the strip club where you got to like keep...
The hallway rush, yeah.
Yeah, the hallway rush. And then against Randy as well a little bit later on.
See, but like I love South Park in such a stupid level. I think they are incredibly smart with what they write and how they nail jokes and social commentary. And I think there's some really smart stuff in here. Now, granted, not all of it's like A-shelf shit. But like something as simple as the DJ... In the strip club, beautiful. Like it's just like it's such a like it's so simple. It's a very simple joke, but I love it. It's just like the whole idea is you have to create in order for you to get. Scott Malkinson, for those who don't know, Scott Malkinson believes like you know they need to find a stripper with the name Classy, and they know she's at the strip club, so they go to the strip club and they work out when the DJ says their name, they come out. In Childlike Innocence, they say their name and they come out. So it's like, okay, we need to get a hold of that DJ booth. We need to get Call Classy out. So they go to the DJ booth, guys like, blah, 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 and someone get me a drink, blah, blah, blah. So you have to go get a drink to
for the most him. Rank shit.
Yeah, and then you're like, okay, we need to get him away from the booth, so let's fuck this drink up. And so like, you put rat poison in it, and the final touch is you fart in it, right? That's the big thing in this game is farts. And you go to the DJ booth and the guy's like, oh, man, this guy give me a drink. Oh, it looks like someone's farted in my drink. You know, like, the delivery, it's like, it's so simple, but it's just like...
Oh, someone farted in my drink. I'll be back soon.
Yes, I'll be right back. You know, like, it sets up, like, it's... Yes, it's a small collect mission for a very simple thing, but, like, that kind of comedic timing is gold because it, A, sets up this guy know what farts and drinks taste like. You know, you know what I mean? It's just, like, it's so good. I love this game immensely because I love South Park. And I think my love of South Park probably pays a little bit more into it than yourself. I'm willing to overlook some of its flaws because of how much I love South Park.
I mean, it definitely had its moments. I just found the overall experience, like, really probably disjointed and inconsistent. Yeah.
Could be the case. This brings us to our number ones.
To our number ones, can you guess it?
No,
honestly,
I don't want to answer until you do it.
My game of the year for 2017 is Atlas's own Persona 5. This playing straight off the tails of Persona 4 Golden. Let's get fucking straight into Persona 5. Let's go. 140 hours later, I think. What the biggest thing I love about Persona 5 really is that how, because Persona's been around for ages, but Persona 5 gave it that big Western audience. Persona 4 started to do it, like it started to bridge that gap, but Persona 5 is really like, hey, Western audience, here's a JRPG you'll fucking love. And everyone did. People that never touched a Persona game or a JRPG in life were like, this game is amazing. The presentation is A+, like the style of the game. Sure, is it up there, you know, graphically? No, but it's how they present the game and its general aesthetic, that real sharp, real jazzy kind of style. The music is great. The story, while convoluted, can get a bit convoluted, is really, really deep. The characters are really deep, you know, and having the choice to spend time with certain characters that you find interesting to expand their own personal story kind of personalizes your playthrough a little bit. You know, I finished the game and I'm like, I maxed out my relationship with blah, blah, and blah. And someone was like, I didn't touch them. I maxed it out with blah, blah, and blah, because they're the characters I found interesting. I remember streaming it with you when we streamed up to Kamoshida, the very first palace, what was her name? Shiho, Anne's friend, jumped off the building of the school. Like, that moment where we were both like, what the f-? Like, the game goes, it holds nothing back on this kind of commentary on the issues of, you know, pedophiles and abuse and sexual assault, and, you know, really doesn't even hide it. It's like, this happens for real, and this is how it is, and this is exactly how it affects people. Mm. You know, you get to see how it affects their family, how it affects you, how it affects the school, how it affects the teachers. You see the wider implications of it. And in its own way, not in the same way as South, but it is social commentary as well, because every palace has a different theme behind it. The first one was obviously sexual assault. And the next one after that is like mental abuse. And, you know, each palace has a very distinct emotion behind it, I guess. And it just kept the game really fresh all the way through. And then obviously the combat got a little dull towards the end, because by the end of it, I was so powerful that I could just mash X and just... doesn't matter what's in front of me, except for the boss battles, of course. But just in presentation, and like in every box, presentation, style, soundtrack, writing, scripts, direction, like everything. It ticked every single box for me.
I know you
put in about 30 hours, and for you, that's a lot of fucking time. I didn't think you'd even get that far, to be honest. But, you know, for you, that's a lot. But it is, like, I took my time with the game, and it took me 100 hours to finish my first playthrough, which is great, because I was entertained for that. At no point did I feel like, ugh, here we go again, because, you know, at the end of every day, you get your free time. You know, so what am I going to do today? Am I going to chat with this person? Am I going to go to the arcade? Am I going to read a book? Am I going to go to my job? You know, every day you could do something different to break that monotony of, you know, regular school life. Yeah, it's just one of the best games I've ever played.
I thought the game was great. I said I spent about 30 or so hours with it. I said I agree. The style was really interesting and really different and really compelling. Mm. And on top of that, like, that soundtrack is
when they played, because the orchestra at the Game of the Year Awards, they opened with Life Will Change from Persona. Like, that's the first track they played. I was like, oh, it's so good to hear it live.
So when they did the game of the year sort of round, and they each played like the theme tune of each one.
Yeah.
Like, they played PUBG for some reason. Like, and they played
PUBG has a song.
Yeah, like the menu music. Then they played like the Horizon music, and they're like, and they're like Zelda, and then it was like. And then they're jamming out to Persona. Like, this is fucking dope.
Yeah.
And, like, I agree. Like, I even just something as simple as the music you get when you finish a game. Not finish a game, when you finish a battle.
Yeah.
Like guitar riff.
It's all
good, real good.
You know, it's rocky, but it has, like, really heavy jazz influence as well, and a bit of swing in there as well. And
yeah, a lot of swing, yeah.
A lot of swing. And even, like, walking the streets of Tokyo. Tokyo?
Yeah, it's Tokyo.
Yeah. When it's raining and the track changes, you know, when it's a nice day, it's the same track, but it's got vocals over the top of it and it's a little bit bouncier. And then when it's raining, there's no vocals. The instruments are pulled back to a little bit more subtle, and it's really just kind of just real cruisy and swingy. And
yeah, like I said, the gameplay was really quite intriguing to me as well. The whole idea of these palaces, you don't do in one go. You do it over a couple of sittings, and you go as far as you can, then you bounce out. And I did like that. I loved a lot. The amount of choice you had at the end of the day was kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, I can see that
for me.
That only ended for me probably about I don't know, 70 or 80% through the game, because a lot of the stuff I ticked off, it's like, I don't have to do that anymore. Mm. I'm free up to do something else.
Yeah, because not knowing how big the game is, I guess it's kind of like, well, I'm trying to prioritize. I'm evenly balancing shit. Like, I've got too many things at once. But once you start realizing the game is longer and longer and longer, you're like, well, I've done that. Yeah. All right, so I'll finish.
And that gives you the incentives, like, I want to get through this palace in 2 days. Because I want, because if you finish the palace before the timer is up, it's all free time. So it gives you that incentive to, like, it'd be safe for me to leave the palace now, but I'm going to push through to the next safe room, because then I can finish this palace on the next day. And that gives me so many more days of, you know, of the free time and all that kind of stuff. Mm. Yeah, the combat was good. It wasn't, you know, I like turn-based combat. That's why I haven't liked the last few Final Fantasies, because they've gone away from it, because Square thinks no one wants it anymore. They do. And, you know, it was basic but complex at the same time. You know, everything's weak to an element, and then you can, if you get a knockdown, you can bat on past someone else. And, you know, the combat was good, but it was nowhere near the best part of the game. The best part was just, for me, just exploring the city and finding new things.
I did like exploring the city.
Meeting new people, and, you know, characters might not pop up till halfway through the game, and all of a sudden they're your favorite character because they're so well written. But I think the thing I like the most is, at least the first time I played it anyway, is when I finished Kamoshida's palace. Well, it's on the last day where you send the calling card to make the treasure appear. Send the calling card like, hey, bitch, we're coming for your treasure. And they're like, no. And then the next day you go in to get
what are they like?
No. And then the next day when you go in, instead of it being the palace music, it's that track called Life Will Change. We're like, dun, 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 and it's real like...
It's like nuts.
It's like, let's get this done. You know, it's fucking on. Let's go. And the first time I went in and that music hit and I'm running to get the treasure, I got it and I'm running. I'm like, this is incredible. Like, if the music wasn't as good, the game wouldn't be anywhere near as good as it was. Mm. But the music is so well done that it just brings everything together in such an amazing way. And it's the only game ever that I've started New Game Plus on. I've never done New Game Plus. I'm like, I'm done. I'm out. But Persona 5, even after you finish the game, there's so much more to see. You know, in your second playthrough, because all your confidence, all your social links are kept, in the second playthrough, you can start ticking off everything you didn't get to, which makes it a less stressful experience because you've got less to do. All your knowledge and your power and all your social stats are kept, all your social levels are kept. So it gives you the second playthrough. You really get to cruise through it and start really getting a bit deeper into it. So, two thumbs up. For me, it's a perfect game. Like, ticks every possible box imaginable.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
What about your game of the year 2017?
It might throw you, but mine is Wolfenstein 2, the new Colossus.
I thought you were going to say PUBG and I would have slapped the glasses off your face. Okay.
As I said, I spent a little bit of time with the new order and it kind of threw me out. I was like, it's fine. And when they announced Wolfenstein 2 was on its way, I was like, okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's check it out. Let's see what it's like. And that open, and like the opening scene where they, you know, where you're BJ, it's right at the end of the previous games. It gives you a nice previously on Wolfenstein. Mm. While he's in his little coma thing, you see him in like his boy and with his, you were there with his mum, and you can have a conversation with your mum, and you hear his dad come in, and so that moment of like, come on, like, just your dad's here, there's like, shit's about to go fucking down. And then the dad comes in, and then he starts yelling at your mum and you about the idea that you were seen talking to.
So I'm just telling someone I'm going to be later than I thought I was going to be.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we're not going to make an hour, hour and 20. Uh-huh. He's having this conversation of like, where he's angry at you for speaking, for talking to a colored child, a black child, mm. black girl. And the way his reasoning is going, it's not more of an issue of how dare you talk to this black person. It's, you know, we can't do that right now. This time and place, that is not doable, whatever. So he walks in expecting to be a piece of shit, and you have this moment of sympathizing with him. You're like, holy shit. So you're not,
he's just trying to provide for the family.
Like, you know, in this day and age, you can't do that because this is his life. This is his work. This is his house. Everything that he works for and builds for is at jeopardy. Mm. As horrible as that sounds. And then he misses a bunch of anti-Semitic shit, and then he managed to hit your mum. So you're like, nah, fuck you, you piece of shit. Like, you're back to piece of shit again. And then you find out that he makes you kill your dog. Nah, you're a total piece of shit.
Presumably. You know, does black out just before. It's
very obvious.
Yeah, I like to think that that didn't happen.
No, it totally did. For me, I'm like, okay, this is way more character driven than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. So I'm instantly connected to BJ. Instantly. Like, and I want to know more about that history and how the history has changed and shaped him. And you come to start to realize that that is what puts him into his Nazi hate. Because it comes from his mother being a Jewish woman. So obviously knowing, you know, seeing all the, you know, the Jewish people like dying, it's him like, well, fuck them. And then on top of that, his dad being such a piece of shit is like an extra level of hate. And it really funnels in everything that he does. And at the start of the game, you also sort of see one of the key women from the previous game get killed. And a lot of the rest of the game is BJ talking to her, using her as his inner monologue to, or in a dialogue to like sort of go through his own potential death. Like, he was beat to shit at the end of New Order. So he is literally in a mech suit that keeps him alive. If he wasn't in that suit...
First scene, you're in a wheelchair. That was rather
We should mention that you're in a wheelchair. In a submarine, in a wheelchair, taking out Nazis. Yeah. Beautiful.
Super cool.
I remember when I first played it, because I played that at EB Expo. I'm like, this is fucking insane.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so then you end up in a mech suit, which if you weren't in, you would die. Mm. Period. You wouldn't be able to walk. You're ruined. So he knows that he's going to die. So he has sort of not an existential crisis, but it's like kind of coming to terms with that. And because he has a partner and she's pregnant, and you know, it's the whole sort of like, I can't tell her, and what do I do when, you know, like, what's going to happen when I'm gone, and what, like, what's
I might have ticked it for you because of the whole new fatherhood
thing. Oh, I'm sure it played a role, but it was a lot more emotional than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And like, even the side characters in this game are incredible.
Yeah. I only played it on the stream with you. I haven't played any more of it. But I'm guessing she's the main antagonist. Fucking psycho, man. She deserves to get it. And I love her daughter as well, like the fat one. She's kind of comic relief, kind of, but not so blatant. I found her really endearing. I thought, and really tragic her as well, because you saw how she got treated by her mom.
And...
it's like, no wonder she fucking betrayed you.
You piece of shit. Yeah. It makes total sense. And then on top of that, the gameplay is so tight. Mm. Like, it's so tight. Like, Machine Games make incredible shooters. And like, because the guns are stupidly huge and everything's really beefy, and like, it has this real sense of weight to it. But because you have this mech suit, you almost have Doom level of speed. Mm-hmm. And and that gives you this false sense of security, where Doom has you moving forward and constantly going. You're like, because you gain health by getting into the combat and punching those demons in the face and taking their health. In this game, it doesn't give you that.
We found that out.
Yeah, it gives you the compulsion to keep moving forward and not stopping for health and just moving and fucking shooting. And the game stops you. It goes, it's like, poof, in the face. It's like, no. It's not how you play. Like, what do you mean? It's like, that's not how you play. Like, but you want me to? And it's like, yeah, we do.
No, we don't. Not quite.
Not quite. Not quite. So it forces you to rethink how you play. And, so cool. Mm. And the settings are so fantastic, because it takes you spend a lot of time in America, and the whole idea of this alternate history where the Nazis won and they've taken over America. So you eventually have to go to Roswell in the US, and you're walking down what is as you would imagine, a 60s happy days, like, street. There's diners, there's streamers, there's parades, but it's also full of fucking Nazis and KKK members, and and they're all chumming. They're all like, ah! But they're the happy days characters in this. Yeah, and it's like, this is fucked.
Yeah.
This is fucked.
Yeah. And on top of that, they've released some good DLC.
And there is some good DLC on the way as well. So, like, once again, with that, like, the reason I'm not going too heavy in, like, later on stories, I don't want to spoil anything, but like, and this is all footage you've seen before as well. So with the Roswell section, there is the strawberry milkshake scene. So you have to take a nuke in a fire extinguisher to this particular person inside Roswell. So you're wandering down the street, and you walk, and you, first of all, you see a giant wanted poster on a building that's your fucking face.
Yeah,
and it's huge. Yeah. Like, it's an entire wall. So you're like, oh fuck. So you're wandering through, and then you get to the diner, and you sit down. You know, you're waiting for the guy to finish serving customers, and this fucking general walks in, and you know, like, the kid, oh shit, and they leave, and it's not quite as intense as the opening scene in Inglourious Basterds, but it has that same level of, like, because he's happy. He's like, hey. And he's like, hey, Ben, you know the greatest things about America? Fucking strawberry milkshakes. Give me a strawberry milkshake. And he's like, oh, man, well, you're a firefighter. What's up, firefighters? Like, obviously, I'm talking this a bit. Firefighters, you're like, cool. Like, so, you know, where are you stationed? Give me your papers. And he's like, oh, and it's kind of like, okay. He's like, Station 6, huh? Yeah, man, like, I got a buddy in Station 5. Like, where's Station 6? And he starts interrogating you. Yeah. And like, because you don't say anything, but it's just like, what seemed like the beginning of a friendly conversation really starts turning, but like, still the happy demeanor, but it's very much probing
that's
you.
That's even more intimidating.
So much more. And yeah, like, the game is fucking fantastic.
I think Inglourious Basterds is a good comparison to make.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love it. I didn't expect it to be my game of the year, but it was fucking fantastic.
All right. So my game of the year was Persona 5. Ryan's game of the year was Wolfenstein 2: The New Colossus. Let's move into the community's games of the year before we wrap it up. Max Cooper, game of the year, Persona 5. Good man. Buddy Watson, game of the year, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Justin Hatsy O'Neill, game of the year, Divinity Original Sin 2.
Damn, PCM.
There's a game I've been wanting to get into as well. David Chataway, game of the year, has to be Zelda Breath of the Wild.
He would have put Rocket League if he could.
Could have been his indie game of the year. Every year since launch. Christy Conway, game of the year. Oh, I really don't have a pick. That's what he says. Joel Groughton, game of the year, Persona 5. Jesse Stevenson, game of the year, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Garner, game of the year, COD World War 2.
Interesting.
Big shooter fan there. That's it.
Damn.
We're not going to... What do you mean you didn't bring any news? We're not going to have enough content to fill out a show.
Yep. It's a long ass show.
That's a lot of exporting time. So as I said, as we said earlier, Merry Christmas to you and yours. Thank you for tuning in on Christmas Day or later if you didn't. We'll be back on January 8th with the first episode of 2018, with the podcast being available 1 hour early on a Monday morning at 8 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time.
On top of that, I just want to say a big, massive thank you to everyone that has supported this channel in what is essentially our somewhat flagship year. We kicked things off probably mid.
The channel was created mid May 2014.
I made the channel in 2014 as a play saver.
When we started the radio,
nothing happened on it for the better part of a year and a bit, and then we started doing stuff in around about November of 2014. October of 2015, we started doing a radio show, but on here, and nothing really came from it. We didn't know what we were doing. So the Pop Culturist, as you guys know it, has been this year. Not even all this year. Probably like 8 months of this year.
Yeah.
So like, we've seen some interesting changes on our side. For us, it baffles us that there's still people that want to come watch this every week and subscribe and do school stuff. So just from like a genuine place, thank you so much for your support this year. Love doing this anyway. Like, we would do this regardless, but it certainly helps knowing that people want to join the conversation, become part of the community and whatnot.
And we'll also be back next year. All this is gone.
Yeah, we're gonna be redoing this set. So every 2018.
It'll look like this with the colours.
Mm.
Purple and black.
Didn't even mean that. Yeah. But thank you to everyone that's in our community. That's everyone that's on Patreon. It's baffling. But if you want to join that community, Joshua, douchebill.
If you enjoy that PlayStation conversation, you can join in many more every Monday morning, except next Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, iTunes, and other podcast services. How do you join that conversation? Head over to www.thepopculturist.com/questions. Give us your thoughts, questions, and suggestions for the show. If a week between shows is a little bit too long, please join us on Facebook, join us on Discord, and if you're feeling generous, join us on Patreon. Head over there, check out the tiers. There might be something there that interests you. If you're going to miss us for that week, like I said, please join us on Facebook and Discord. Ryan and I will still be in the chats, even though we're taking a 1 week break from this. We'll still be in with the community chatting with all you guys.
Yeah. For the last time, 2017, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
And that was for the players.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And a happy Hanukkah.
You bastard.
You filthy animal.